everybody, and welcome back to Paddock Project. I'm your host, Tiggy, and I'm joined today by none other than Caroline from Caroline's Corner. Caroline, it's so good to see you. The last time we saw each other, I think, was in Vegas.
But it's so good to be here. I'm so excited to be even a small part of this new era of this beautiful podcast. So thanks for having me.
No, you're incredible. We were just reminiscing before we hit record that the first time we met was Austin last year at the McLaren Girl Start event, which was just, it felt like a very fitting event to meet each other at. So
it really was. I mean, what an incredible, that is one of the smaller activations I've done that just has such a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
Seeing this next generation of young girls and their eyes lighting up for this beautiful sport that we love, it just makes it feel like it's all worth it.
Absolutely. Could not agree more. But you've been killing it. It's been so fun to watch your videos. You're so funny. And for anyone listening who doesn't know Caroline, I'm sure not very many of you that description fits, because Caroline, you're everywhere and you're doing such cool things. But
thanks.
Definitely go check out Caroline's videos at It's Caroline's Corner. Is that right?
Yes. And I want to preface by saying, don't take it seriously. 90% of the things that happen on my page are a joke. So please take it with a grain of salt. I feel like I'm going to be presenting myself so professionally today. Like, let's talk professionally about this sport. And then people go to my page and they're like, who is this girl?
No, but that's amazing. Like, get you someone who can do both, which you excel at.
Well, thank you.
So today we're diving into all things rookies, which is so fun. If you can believe it, we have six of them joining the grid this year, which I'm counting Liam Lawson in that.
But he counts.
He absolutely counts. We had zero this time last year, which is actually crazy how much we've switched. And I was looking at the data, and I only went back to 2015 or 2016, but this is the most number of rookies we've had joining the grid in over a decade, which is kind of crazy. It's over a quarter of the grid.
It is. And it in some ways doesn't feel like new blood because we've seen the Liams already and we've gotten some glimpses of Jack Doohan. But also, you know, there's also a potential for a switch even there in Alpine with Colapinto showing up on, I think it was today that they released like the photo of him showing up at HQ. And I was like, ooh.
Uh-oh. New blood in the house. I know. We'll definitely get to that conversation because it feels like Jack Doohan has a lot of pressure on his young shoulders. But one other piece of data I thought was interesting was last year, the average age of the grid was about 30 years old, and it's bumped down to 26 and a half. And obviously, you have the outliers in like Lewis and Alonso and whatnot. But the grid is getting much younger, which I think is going to be interesting in terms of F1 dynamics and how both like the racing feels and also just everything around the racing. So
yeah, and what it means for the incoming, you know, Formula 2, Formula 3 drivers that are looking to come into this. I think a lot of them like to see older guys in it because they know that their time is ending. But with it getting younger and younger, I feel like all these drivers are getting hungrier and hungrier, and the wolves are out to play. It is cutthroat in here.
It is. I can't believe even over the past couple of years how much we've seen like mid driver swaps. And to your point, like it seems like we've seen a lot of these drivers because they've filled in for drivers in the past, or they've even just kind of taken a full-time seat partway through the season. And so it's definitely a bit of a different vibe. But in terms of, for anyone who's not aware of the rookies joining the grid, we have Kimi Antonelli joining Mercedes next to George Russell. We have Ollie Berman at Haas. We've seen him race a few times, which is exciting. We have Gabriel Bortoleto at Sauber, Jack Doohan at Alpine, Isaac Hadjar at Racing Bulls, I think they're called now, not V-Carb, and Liam Lawson at Red Bull. So a full house, really.
It really is. And you know what? The chronic appendicitis can hit anybody at any time.
It's so true.
So everybody needs to watch out.
Absolutely. I mean, the domino effect from Albon just continues. Mm-hmm. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
It does.
So for today, I think we'll just go through a little bit of their backgrounds. We'll dive into some fun questions, who we think will be maybe the rookie MVP of the season, who we think might outperform their teammates, who's going to fly, who might not, and more. But a couple quick snapshots to start. So the youngest person we have joining the grid, Kimi Antonelli, is 18, which is quite young.
It is. Think of yourself at 18.
Yeah. I'm like, what was I
doing? I was not ready to get in a high-speed car at 18.
Absolutely. And if his practice at Monza was any indication of the hunger we're going to be seeing from him, we're in for a treat.
Yes.
The oldest is Liam Lawson at 22, which is not old. I think we only have one F2 champion joining the grid, which is Gabriel Bortoleto. And then those who have already scored points in F1, which I think is interesting, is Ollie Bearman, who scored points in his debut when he replaced Carlos in his appendicitis.
Yes.
And Liam Lawson. And they're coming from all over. They're coming from Australia, Italy, Brazil, France, New Zealand, and the UK. So very diverse set.
Yeah, it's really exciting to see. And it's funny, too, because with so many of them, the fan base has a different view of each of them, as some of them have made their debuts in Formula One already, or we've seen them in practice, etc., and they've kind of been around the paddock for a while. And others that I thought were some more unknowns, like Gabriel Bortoleto, kind of came out of nowhere for me.
Yeah.
But just a couple of, I don't know, joke things that I've posted and mentioned him in them, and the Brazilians are like to the roof excited about him. I mean, he might win like driver of the day first weekend just from the Brazilian fan base alone. It's insane.
That is such a good point, because also I feel like we saw that with Franco Colapinto and like how much engagement he has gotten from his fans. And I think with Checo leaving, there's a little bit of a gap in that kind of Latin American fan market. And I feel like Franco Colapinto and Gabriel Bortoleto are going to be carrying a lot of that weight on their shoulders, which is so fun.
It'll be really fun to see. I think everybody wants to see Franco come back. Then I think that Jack brings a lot to the table, too. I mean, I know we're kind of talking more of their marketability and their personalities, but in the same way, in the car, they all bring really, really good competition. So it'll be exciting to see how it shakes out.
Yeah, absolutely. I know we haven't seen as much from Jack Doohan, but I'm excited to see. And I feel like he's gotten a little bit of the media short end of the stick lately.
It's kind of hard. I mean, he does probably feel like he's coming in a little bit as the underdog with people kind of out here actively rooting against him. But you know what? Shout out to the Alpine admin. They are like Jack Doohan's biggest fan. Love to see it. I love it.
These F1 admins really work overtime. They are putting the teams on their back. I love it for them. Okay, so let's dive in to each of them. I think let's just go alphabetically because that feels like the easiest and most fair. But Kimi Antonelli joining Mercedes, his background. So he's an Italian driver from Bologna. As we saw, he made his first kind of big debut, F1 debut in Monza for that practice. And so that was very strategic of Mercedes, of course. He's 18 years old, like we said. His dad is also a motorsport racer. So it's in his family. It's in his blood. He started karting at 7 and joined the Mercedes Junior team in 2018. So he's actually been a part of the family for quite some time. And a lot of people have talked about Toto kind of just thinking that he's maybe the next Max Verstappen, which I think we'll talk about. But he's considered to be one of the brightest young talents in recent years. He dominated a lot of the junior categories in Formula 4, Formula Regional. He skipped Formula 3, headed straight to F2 with Prema, and he finished 6th place this past season. So it's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, I do think he was kind of a hidden talent for a while, but then when he got that promotion skipping Formula 3, he started to blip up on some people's radars and be really exciting. It at first surprised me when Toto snatched him up and announced him as their driver for this season, especially in the wake of finding out that Carlos had lost his seat. I think that was a pretty big surprise. But at the same time, I think that they're committed to development. And I think that Toto knew that if he let Kimi go, somebody else was going to pick him up faster than they could prepare the seat for him at Mercedes. So I'm definitely interested to see how things will look this year.
I think that's so right. And I think Toto probably has a little bit of he definitely has regret over Max Verstappen and letting him go. And I think he probably just does not want to see that happen again if Kimi is, if he deserves the hype. But yeah, I'm curious. I mean, he's so young, but what do we think Toto sees in him that makes him think that he's the next Max Verstappen? Like, obviously finishing sixth at 18 years old is an incredible feat, but it's not like he won the championship handedly. And so I guess I'm curious, like, what Toto is seeing that maybe the results aren't showing.
Yeah, I think that Kimi has something that you can't teach, which is a level head. And he comes and approaches every race, every time he's behind the wheel, I feel like with the same attitude. Yeah. And I'm sure Toto's had his fair share of time with drivers that can get pretty hot-headed and get pretty frustrated. And you just, at that point, you're just managing. It feels a little bit like babysitting. And Kimi does have that unique ability at such a young age that we saw in Oscar Piastri too, that he just keeps a level head. He keeps his head down and he pushes forward, and he's young and he's eager to learn.
Yeah.
Which I think those kinds of drivers really, really thrive under Toto.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's interesting comparing him to Max, though, as so many people are doing, because I would not have described Max at that age as someone with a level head, but he's the most talented driver in Formula One right now. So it's like they get compared a lot, but I actually think they're very different in terms of demeanor and in terms of level head. And I mean, it's great that Kimi seems to have that already at such a young age, but... Yeah, I wonder if that's a better
fit. I commonly disagree with some of the comparisons that people will make. Yeah. And I know, like, as a somewhat newer fan, when people would compare Oscar Piastri to Kimi Raikkonen, I didn't see that either. I'm like, I don't see him as the new Iceman. He's got so much, not to throw any shade on Kimi Raikkonen, but I feel like Oscar has so much more personality than Kimi Raikkonen has. But that's just my personal opinion. But I think Kimi he's his own person.
Yeah.
I think because he's so young coming into this is where the easy comparison is to Max.
Yeah.
And they have the same ferocity behind the wheel, like we saw in that practice session. Exactly. So,
yeah, that was funny. I mean, Mercedes knew that they were going to be announcing him right after that. So I would have loved to be a fly on the wall in the Mercedes paddock, garage, hospitality situation. How do we think he'll do next to George? Like that was an interesting thing for me to think about when he got announced, of like, does this say that Toto has confidence that George is like ready to be a number one driver, ready to kind of take Kimi under his wing, has the maturity and like skill to shine in that role? Or was it more like, we really want to invest in Kimi as the next great talent, and George, you can kind of be helpful in developing that, but we're going to start to be the Kimi show at some point.
What do you think?
I think it's really hard. I think George is really good, and we saw how well he did last season next to Lewis, head to head with Lewis, and how much he shined last year, that I sort of think that Mercedes probably hopes that George is a world champion caliber driver and they can develop him into that and also be investing in this young talent. But like, Kimi's time will come in however many years if he's not ready for that in the first few. And so I think it's a vote of confidence in George personally that they signed Kimi instead of someone like Carlos, for example, because I think that would have been a very different dynamic.
Yeah, that's a really fair point. And I think that this year's very important for them both. Like, I wonder if the question of the number one driver is still a little bit in the air, obviously in George's favor, but if Kimi starts to outperform him, I don't think that they'll hesitate to switch it.
Yeah. Interesting.
But that's my hot take.
Yeah. No, that is a hot take. I don't know enough, I feel like, about Kimi's personality to think about how their dynamic will be, but I feel like George is very easy to get along with unless you're Max Verstappen, but I think George is like a pretty easygoing guy. And so I think there will be more fireworks between other teammates than there will between George and Kimi, if I had to guess.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Probably. Kimi seems to be pretty chill. Yeah, so
I
think it's going to look a little bit more like the Lando Oscar dynamic over at Mercedes. Yeah,
that's a good point. What do you think success looks like for Kimi this year?
Ooh, I mean, obviously all of them are going to say winning the driver's championship. I don't think that's a realistic.
Yeah.
I mean, anything is possible. Let's be honest. Anything is possible. I don't think that that is the benchmark necessarily for Kimi in his first year. Mm-hmm. If I was Kimi, I would say my definition of success is beating my teammate on my first year. If I were him, it would probably be winning a Grand Prix. I think if he wins a Grand Prix this season, he'll view that as a huge win.
Yeah.
And I think that's possible.
Yeah.
I do.
I think so.
What do you think?
I think so too. I would love that I would love for that to be in Italy. That would be iconic.
Oh,
could you imagine?
Yes.
Yeah.
That would be so beautiful.
Oh.
Well, I'd love to see like Kimi and then Lewis and then George.
Yep.
And then Toto could say, all my boys.
That would be amazing. And poor Charles getting left off the podium in that. But
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
He's had his time.
Let's move on to Ollie Berman, the bear, who is going to Haas. He's going to be next to Esteban Ocon, which I feel like there could be a little bit of a different dynamic there between those teammates. But a little bit of background on Ollie. So he's a British driver from Chelmsford. I could very well be saying that wrong. But
don't come for us Brits. We love you.
We love the Brits. He is 19, so also quite young in this pack of rookies. Started karting at age 8. He joined the Ferrari Driver Academy in 2021. He did race in F3. He finished 3rd in 2022, 6th in F2 in 2023, and 12th this past season. So a little bit of a dip there. He was named Ferrari's reserve driver last year. Quickly made his F1 race debut, as we discussed, when he replaced Carlos Sainz for the Saudi GP with the appendicitis issue. It made him the youngest ever driver to compete for Ferrari. And in that, he finished P7, became the youngest driver to score points on his debut, which just incredible. And I remember his poise really well from that weekend. We were talking about Kimi kind of having a level head, but Ollie Berman, like the amount of pressure to jump into a Ferrari of all cars so early in the season.
And then score points in it.
Insane.
Yeah.
And I remember his dad from that weekend too. It was just so wholesome and sweet.
I know. Ollie, I feel like, gives me Jensen Button vibes in his countenance.
Yes.
I feel like he is going to work at Sky Sports F1 when he's done. Like, I feel like they're already preparing his desk.
Yes, absolutely.
He is just such a golden British boy. Yes. And I love that.
I love the term countenance. That's a great word.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm going to start using that in my vocab more. So he raced again for Haas a couple times when K-Mag first had to serve his race ban penalty at the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. And he actually outperformed Hülkenberg in that, finished P10. And then he became the first driver in history to score points for two different teams in his first two races. So Ollie just kind of shattering the rookie records last season already. He then raced again for Haas in Sao Paulo, finished P12, which overall was not his best showing, but it was an absolutely chaotic race. I think he did well just to even finish it and come that close to points in general. But yeah, what do we think about Ollie? Obviously, he didn't score great in F2 this season, but do we pin that on his duties elsewhere and maybe potential distractions, or is it not even – I guess that's a broader question. Like, are F2 results comparable for how – you do or you might fare in F1?
Yeah, that definitely poses a really good question. If Formula 2 results really are an indicator for them in F1, to see somebody like Ollie do so well in F1, I think that the teams and the people that are making these decisions know a lot more than me. But I also think that it must have been hard for Ollie's mindset to go from breaking records, driving in different cars in different places, to then have to go back to F2 after being on the mountaintop. And then it's like, all right, now go back to the lodge. And he's like, but I want to be on the mountaintop. And so I actually think it's a really good look for him in F1 that he was able to perform so well. I'm more curious about how it's going to go with Esteban as a teammate.
No, Esteban does not have the best track record when it comes to getting along with teammates. That said, has Esteban ever been paired with like a a real rookie? Like, has he had to sit in that role of being sort of the mentor? I'm trying to think back.
For as long as I can remember, he's been the young guy.
So it's a little bit of a different role reversal for him. And I wonder if he'll fare better in that than he has as the younger guy too.
I think he'll only fare better in it if he's beating his teammates.
Very good point.
But I don't, my other hot take, and it might not be a hot take, but I think that Ollie's going to outperform him in the Haas.
I could definitely see that. I would love that for Ollie, honestly.
I think all of England would love it too.
I know. I am an Esteban Ocon fan. Like, I think he is a really good driver, but his countenance, perhaps, I've not loved as much. So, yeah, I think that is the big open question. I could get on board with that hot take of Ollie outperforming Ocon. We'll have to see.
I do think that Ollie's a hard person to root against, though, and I think he's a hard person to dislike. I think he just has that really easygoing way about him. He and Kimi Antonelli are actually really good friends because I think they were teammates at Prima. And I think that Esteban – I think he'll be really nice to Esteban. I actually think that – they'll get along well. And if there's any fallout, I don't think it'll be because of Ollie.
I think that's a fair assumption. Ollie just seems like such a nice, sweet bear, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Everybody loves Ollie. How can you not? We need a t-shirt. Exactly. Everybody loves Ollie.
All right, we'll make that. On to Gabriel Bortoleto joining Sauber. Next to Nico Hülkenberg, which is going to be interesting because Nico's sneakily older than I think most people give him credit for. He's 37, I believe, so a little bit of a different vibe. Mm-hmm. So Gabriel, he's a Brazilian driver from Sao Paulo. He's 20 years old, started karting at age 7, moved to Europe at age 11, as many of the drivers do, just to get in that European pipeline. He was actually signed to the McLaren driver development program in 2023, so they had to release him to drive for Sauber at the end of 2024. He was F3 champion in 2023 with Trident and then F2 champion this past season with Invicta. So he became the first F2 champion to be directly promoted into F1 since Mick Schumacher in 2021, which I thought was an interesting stat, but that's good for him. He was awarded the FIA Rookie of the Year award this past year in Rwanda. And one fun fact I think of note, we've talked about this before, but he's managed by none other than Fernando Alonso's management company, A14. Which means this is Alonso's first driver to get into F1. And I think that's a little bit of an interesting dynamic. I mean, at least they're not teammates, but it's kind of an interesting situation.
I wonder if there's any kind of a clause to where they can't be teammates.
Conflict of interest.
That might be a conflict of interest.
That's a good point. So I guess that's good. He's not in the Aston Martin family, so to speak. But
not that there's any question of anybody else being Fernando's teammate in Aston Martin.
Exactly.
Just throwing that one out there.
Very true. But Gabriel is interestingly on a multi-year contract, which I think he's one of the rare rookies to have a multi-year contract. So barring anything crazy, he will be racing for Audi in 2026 when that switches. But Gabriel has the best track record in terms of results, but I feel like he's been the quietest in like the media, maybe aside from the Brazilian fan hype, but we haven't heard as much about him. And I guess that goes back to the question of like, do F2 results really indicate F1 success or not? But I'm surprised we haven't heard more from him.
Yeah, I do think that he's a bit of a silent killer in as far as him in the media space, but not to always bring it back to Oscar, but Oscar also won Formula 3 and Formula 2 in their respective years. And I think he's not struggling one bit. But you also have to remember he's in the McLaren. I don't think it's going to be quite so smooth sailing for poor Gabriel in the stake. Is that what it's called?
Stake Sauber?
I don't know.
All these teams with their changing names.
Their name changes. I know. I'm trying to check the notes. Like, Sauber. Yeah. I'm going to call it Sauber. So I don't know that it'll be quite so smooth sailing in the Sauber. But again, just like I said with Kimi, anything can happen. They might come in with a banging car this year and lights out and away we go. But I think that he's not going to struggle for a fan base. he seems to be one of the quieter guys, which only makes people more excited. Yeah. But what do you think about him and Nico? How do you think that'll go?
I actually think that might be one of the better driver pairings in terms of dynamic and just getting along. I feel like Nico Hülkenberg is a great guy. He's a little bit older, maybe more at the tail end of his career. And he's German, so he's, I think, for the Audi connection there, he's got a pretty good foothold in that team. So I don't think he's going to be feeling unconfident, for lack of a better term, in terms of his stature there. But I also think he's such a great guy. He will really be a good mentor for Gabriel, and hopefully we'll be able to see Gabriel shine. And I think, to your point of the Sauber car potentially not being great, I would love for that to turn around this season, but I'm not super optimistic in terms of that. But with that car not being great, it's not like they're going to be going at each other's throats for podiums, you know. Right. I think it's going to be, hopefully they'll be fighting at the higher end of the midfield this year. But I think it's going to be a really good dynamic between the two. That's one of my favorite pairings going into next year.
Yeah, especially for the rookies. I think that he really lucked out in having Nico as a teammate, because I don't think that Nico will try to sabotage him. I think that Nico has officially entered the mentor stage of Formula One, and he wasn't really, I mean, obviously he wasn't able to do that with Kevin because they were in the same stage, but I think that he'll enjoy being the experienced one in the team. And I think that Gabriel's countenance will allow for him to be really receptive of that. And I mean, who doesn't love having their ego stroked, wanting the young one to learn from them? And I think that that'll be a nice dynamic. Yeah. So I agree.
I hope for Gabriel, he's excited about this year and doesn't feel too much pressure with the Brazilian fan base. I don't think they've had a race winner since Massa, so there is a decent amount of pressure on his shoulders, but I think he'll handle it well. To your point, the silent killer, I think, is a good...
Yeah, I mean, these guys have pressure on them all the time. I don't think that this is really going to feel that much different for him.
Could your daily routine be full of hormone disruptors? There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. To combat this, we've been loving Hormone Harmony from Happy Mammoth, which contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens that help the body adapt to any stressors. With over 30,000 reviews and counting, a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PADDOCKPROJECT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PADDOCKPROJECT for 15% off today. Okay, moving on to young Jack Doohan, who is joining Alpine, and he'll be paired with Pierre Gasly, which I think we'll have thoughts on that as well. But his background, so he's Australian from the Gold Coast. He's 22, so a little on the older side, like Liam. His father, Mick Doohan, is the 5-time GP motorcycle world champion. He started karting at age 9. His first kart was from none other than Michael Schumacher himself, which is incredible.
Like, yes. Gifted to him,
his dad and Michael Schumacher are friends, and so he was given a cart. Wow. His first cart was from Michael Schumacher, and I think there's a picture floating around.
So are he and Mick friends?
That's a good question. They must be. I think growing up, they must be friends. Yeah,
they had to be, because Mick's kind of also in the Alpine system in their WEC series. So I feel like they are.
I think they're definitely friends. So Jack actually started with Red Bull. He joined the Red Bull Junior team in 2017, moved to the Alpine Driver Academy in 2022. He started F3 in 2020 and then has done 3 seasons in Formula 2. And in 2023, he finished 3rd in the standings. And 2024, he was not in F2. He focused on his reserve driver duties for Alpine.
Thanks, Oscar.
Yeah. Exactly. He made his F1 debut in Abu Dhabi after it was announced that Ocon would not be racing his final race with Alpine, which, you know, I have my own thoughts on that whole situation, but
Have you guys talked about that at all on the pod?
And I think we talked about it in the Abu Dhabi recap, just that it was sort of unceremonious, and regardless of what the reasoning was, it just felt wrong, I think.
It felt weird. I chatted with somebody who works in England in motorsports, and golly, this is bad of me to not remember what they do, but they were saying that every driver has different clauses with the teams, and that Alpine is notoriously known for being a little bit more stringent with those clauses. And because I asked, I was like, why was Carlos allowed to then do testing with Williams right after racing for Ferrari? And they said that Ferrari and Williams worked it out with each other where they didn't really care, but that Alpine's notoriously known for caring, and that they were going to hold Esteban to his contract, which the term, like, those dates are usually like December 31st or whatever. And so then you can't race for another team. And that's the only way they were able to get out of it was by having Jack in that seat for the last race. So,
yeah, I'm sure that I'm sure it was all to do with contracts and clauses, but it just felt kind of petty. And I almost feel like it did Jack doing a disservice to throw him in there at the end of the season, kind of a chaotic situation. He, you know, it wasn't probably as good of a showing as he would have liked. And so it just kind of leaves not the best taste maybe in everyone's mouth or best impression heading into this season.
Yeah.
And after all the pressure now with Franco Colapinto, it just, it felt like it almost did him a disservice more than anything else.
I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah. So let's talk about Colapinto.
Ooh, let's.
Recently as Alpine's reserve driver, and Flavio Briatore, who is kind of running the show at Alpine currently, has said that, quote, if a driver is not making progress, then he will be replaced. How at risk do we think Jack Doohan's seat is?
I think if Alpine has taught us anything for the last 3 or 4 years, it's that they are not always the most secure place to be. And that goes for just about everybody. That's not just the drivers. That also goes for the principals. That also goes for the personnel. And I hesitate, well, and I hesitate to say not safe, because obviously, like, it's a safe space. I mean, I don't think anybody's feeling, like, physically unsafe there. But just career-wise, I think it's been a little bit of a question mark. Because there's been a lot of investors coming in. There's been a lot of investors leaving. There's been a lot of people coming in. There's been a lot of people leaving. And the powertrains and the engines and the there's a lot going on at Alpine.
Yes.
And so I don't necessarily think that this comes as a shock to anybody. Like, to us, we're like, oh my gosh, what a shocking phrase to say. But I think that this is true all the time.
Yes.
And now they're just saying it. I don't think that any of the seats are safe.
Yes, that's such a good take. And to your point, with everything else going on in that organization and the power units is such a good shout. Like, there's a lot of movement. So we'll see what happens.
And I hate it for Jack because I feel like he's been waiting and working and stayed loyal to Alpine to do his due diligence to get this seat. And what a shame.
I know.
If they're already planning on replacing him. Like, I feel like with this, they're basically telling him, you better be lights out amazing.
Yes.
Or else we're bringing in Colapinto.
Yeah.
And all I'll say is, this is just another reason we need that 11th team, people. We need two more seats.
If nothing else, I mean, as Americans, I don't know how you feel, but I am over the moon to have a born and bred American team. But yeah, for the most part, I'm just excited about two more seats on the grid.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, well, what do you think about the Jack Doohan clause, if you will?
I think he's in a really tough spot. I think not only do they have someone waiting in the wings who has proven himself as a worthy opponent to Alex Albon, who is a great driver and has, you know, come into Formula One, had a lot more experience under his belt in that type of car. And I don't think we can underestimate the importance of that fan base and that engagement, and that what that translates into is money on the Franco Colapinto fan base side of things. I mean, if you just scroll through all the Williams and Alpine comments, anything that has Franco in it, like, the engagement is through the roof. The comments are all in Spanish. Like, I don't think you can deny some of that from a business point of view.
Totally.
And so I think those are two really big checks in the Franco Colapinto side of the tally. But I do think it's hard to argue against performance. So if Jack Doohan comes out absolutely ripping and on fire, like it's hard to argue that, but I don't think that's necessarily a fair expectation of a rookie. So
no, not at all. But it's just your heart feels so torn because you want it for both of them and you're like, ooh, but yeah. Related but unrelated, I've also thought that they need to have a race in Argentina.
Yes.
You know, seeing this response to Colapinto,
yes.
I feel like I don't understand. If we already go to Brazil, we're already there. And also, why do we come back to the States after Brazil? Whose idea was that? What in the world? Go to Argentina.
Literally.
Like,
yes.
They are all so excited for you to come. Go do it.
I would love a race in Argentina. It's such a beautiful country.
That would be so cool. I think everybody would love a race in Argentina, but they didn't ask
me. We got to get Franco on the grid first, and then we'll get that in motion.
Yes. Yes. Okay, talk to us about Isaac. Yes. I feel like he's kind of another unknown.
He is a little bit of another unknown. He has been in the Red Bull system for some time, so I think he's a relatively known entity for them, at least the past 2 years. But yes, joining Racing Bulls, he will be next to none other than Yuki Tsunoda. He is a French-Algerian driver from Paris, 20 years old, also started karting at the ripe age of 7. And one interesting fact about Isaac, which we don't get that much about this man, but I'm excited to learn more. But he, like Liam, loves the movie Cars, and he's cited that as his inspiration to get into motorsport.
No
Similar to
way.
Liam. I love that for him. It's a great film. He made his F3 debut in 2022. He finished 4th, and then he raced in F2 the past 2 seasons. Most recently, he finished P2 with Campos. And like we were saying, he's been a member of the Red Bull Junior team since 2022. And he's not made an official F1 race debut yet, so we don't have a lot of information or data on him. But I'm curious, Caroline, what you think of him, what you think of his dynamic with Yuki will be.
Yeah, it's hard to know as far as, you know, his personality and what he'll be bringing to the culture of Racing Bulls. I think that he comes across as a little bit quieter, and so does Yuki. So I think that the vibe is going to feel a little bit how Stake felt last year when we had Joe and Valtteri. And, like, Valtteri, of course, is a personality, but he has that kind of quiet comedy about him. And so Yuki is by no means, you know, trying to get into the spotlight in, you know, any of the media. Yeah. I don't really get the sense of that from Isaac either. I think that Yuki is over it when it comes to getting new teammates. And I can't blame him. No. And it's not Isaac's fault. And I don't think he'll hold it against Isaac. But I think that he's probably learned by this point, don't get too close because they're going soon. And so ever since Pierre, I think that nobody's really measured up in his mind or in his heart. So I think he's just there. What was it Marshawn Lynch said in his interview? Like, I'm here because they told me I have to be here, or something like that. I feel like that's the vibe Yuki's bringing.
Yeah, I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
Yes. Yes. What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think I'm very curious. This isn't rookie related, but more just about Yuki. I'm very curious to see what his attitude is this season after getting passed up for the Red Bull seat and what it means for his future. I think it would be great to see him follow Honda to Aston Martin. But again, those seats seem pretty locked down, unfortunately. I think the question this year that raises for me, and with this kind of revolving door at VCARB, AlphaTauri, Racing Bulls, whatever the name du jour is, but is the concept of this Red Bull Junior program and whether it's sort of a make or break year for proving that in a way, because Liam got the seat at Red Bull, part of the Red Bull Junior program. So I guess you could say that that's a case study of it working, but you've seen it with so many of the other people who have cycled through that seat, just never getting to that Red Bull seat. And I don't know how much of that dynamic is because of Max and the unique characteristics that second seat needs to provide vis-a-vis Max, or if it's just that this junior team concept isn't really working for them in some ways. But I don't know.
Well, I think that they have a they've had a good problem with the junior program, and that it's robust, mm-hmm. and that they've got plenty of guys and plenty of options. And they were building it out in a time when these drivers weren't getting these long contracts. Yeah. And now you have Max with this record long contract, and that's locking down one of your precious seats for a long time, which is both encouraging and discouraging yeah. to these development drivers, because they see the potential of getting a nice long contract, but also there's the space for them is getting smaller and smaller, and the competition's getting fiercer and fiercer, and these guys are getting in younger and younger and staying longer and longer. Mm-hmm. And so it's a hard time to be a Formula One driver.
It is. The scarcity value is real. Yeah, that's one of my hot takes, which I recognize is very hot, but I think Red Bull might have a big problem on their hands if they don't deliver Max a good car. I do really think he will look elsewhere. And I think he wants to win. And I think he is not necessarily loyal to that organization if they're not delivering what he needs to have for success in his mm-hmm. mind, mm-hmm. which at this stage, it's world championships. Like, it's hard to go down from there. And Max has a lot else going on mm-hmm. in his life. And so if he's not fighting for world championships, obviously, this is a big if.
What's he fighting for?
Yeah, I think Red Bull might have a problem on their hands if they don't have a good number two and a robust pipeline that could potentially be fighting at the top for them. So, see.
Definitely. And Max knows what it looks like to win. And he knows the people that need to be there in order for that to happen. And unfortunately, when you have a team that sees a lot of success like Red Bull has seen, those people start to get poached by other teams and by big dollar signs. And it's what Mercedes was dealing with at the end of their fabulous reign. And now here they are. And I don't think Max wants to stick around for that aftermath. I think he wants to keep the party going. And so he knows who to follow and where to go. I mean, I heard the rumor that like Aston Martin was recruiting him heavily and, you know, everything's a rumor, but then also every rumor has a little bit of truth in it. So it's interesting. I agree with you in your hot take that I think he's a loyal guy, but I think he's loyal to winning.
Agreed. So that brings us to Liam Lawson joining Max at Red Bull. I think we have the most information on Liam, Kiwi driver from the North Island of New Zealand, signed with the Red Bull Junior team 2019. He raced in F3 in 2019 and 2020, and then F2 in 2021 and 2022, where he most recently finished third with Carlin. But he's been a reserve driver for the Red Bull family since 2022. He made his F1 debut when he replaced Daniel Ricciardo at the Dutch Grand Prix for five races in 2023, scored his first points in Singapore in that incredibly impressive showing, which is one of the toughest races on drivers. And then replaced Daniel in 2024 from the US Grand Prix and on. And then, as we were saying, the controversial decision by Red Bull to promote Liam over Yuki to that seat. But I think an interesting conversation is that Liam-Max dynamic. As we were saying, like, that second seat is pretty unique in terms of the set of characteristics that person needs to have. And I think Checo actually was kind of a model in that sense. But I wonder, Liam's young. He's hungry. He's confident. We saw his battles with Checo, and he's not afraid to mm-hmm. kind of step up and assert himself. And I'm curious, what do you think that will mean for Max?
Yeah, Liam doesn't strike me as much of the team player type, which is not a diss in this sport. I think that it's going to be very interesting. My biggest thought through a lot of the watching these things with Liam is his manager deserves a big fat promotion for the number of times his manager has gotten him in the seat, has gotten him in the race, has gotten him in the forefront of Red Bull's minds. And to leapfrog Yuki like that, I mean, that's career making 100%. For his manager. And I think that Liam has what it takes to stay at Red Bull for a long time. And a part of me almost wonders, and I did not process these thoughts as before they're coming out. So these are coming to you guys hot off the press. I almost wonder if Red Bull is preparing for Max to want to leave and for them to have somebody young and ready to step into that Max role. Because Max didn't start at Red Bull and then just start firing out drivers' championships. I mean, it was a struggle for a little while there. And I don't think Max has the patience for that anymore because he feels like he did his time working on the development and then he got to the pinnacle. Yeah. And I think that Liam is ready to put in that work.
Yeah.
And to be there for the long haul.
I think that's so true. And I think Red Bull probably sees a much higher ceiling in Liam on that front than they maybe saw in Yuki, even though Yuki has performed well mm-hmm. and outperformed teammates and all of that. But in terms of someone to eventually replace Max, they probably feel like Liam fits that mold more than Yuki or others have in the past.
Yeah. But I do think it's going to create problems for them this yeah. year between Liam and Max. I don't see that being kumbaya over at Red Bull.
There are going to be some sparks, I think, in that relationship. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, that's a wrap on our rookies. Maybe, Caroline, just a few questions for you before we wrap, but would love for you to share sure. your F1 origin story. How did you get into the crazy sport? Take us through that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I grew up in a sporting family. My dad played professional football for 21 wow. years. I didn't know much or really anything about F1 in my early life. I grew up down the street from the Charlotte Motor Speedway, so NASCAR was very much a part of my life. I can't say I went to a lot of them, but, you know, went to school with a lot of people that were involved. I feel like I kind of grew up in a motorsport culture in that way, but I viewed it in a different light because we all know NASCAR is not the same yeah. as Formula One.
Very different.
And I married a man who is Italian, and he introduced me to this lovely world of Formula One. He's a massive Ferrari fan, shocker to none. And he basically Pavloved me into it. He would put Drive to Survive on in and around the house, and I just didn't really want to get into it. I rejected it at first. I was like, this is stupid. I know what motorsport is. Grew up with it. Don't want to do it. And it was actually Carlos that convinced me to like it. Everybody likes it because of Daniel. And Daniel, his attitude reminded me a lot of the NASCAR drivers, which kind of turned me off. And I like Daniel. I don't mean to say that I don't like Daniel. I think he's great. But it was Carlos and his dad on the show that really like convinced me to like it, which is hilarious because his dad isn't even an F1 driver. But yeah, got into it as a fan. We went to COTA that year and we did the GA sitting in the dirt, running up Turn 1 Hill at 6 a.m. Like,
awesome.
We did it. So we did the whole thing. And it was a ton of fun. And I turned to my husband, you know, and when we would watch races and things, and I'd say, oh my gosh, somebody should do a video where they mash up this and that just happened. And, oh, it would be so funny if somebody used this thing and did it and pretended to be Max or whatever. And he finally looked at me and was like, will you just do it?
Aww.
Like, will you just go and do it and not talk about it anymore and do it? And so I was like, okay, whatever. And then one thing turned into another. And then now here
Look
we are. And I know so much more about it than I ever thought I would. But
incredible.
I love it for bringing me people like you and so yeah. many of the incredible women that are in this space that like nobody saw coming.
Yes.
So
I love that. That's such a sweet story. And kudos to your husband for just being like, do the darn thing.
I know.
And now you are the one doing
He's
it.
Great.
I love that. So where can listeners find you, Caroline?
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, Patreon, and Threads.
Amazing.
I wish I could do Twitter/X, but I just can't do it. Don't look for me there because I'm not there. But I am on Threads. I am on Instagram, TikTok, and Patreon.
Amazing. Well, Caroline, thank you so much. This was amazing. And we'll chat very soon, I'm sure.
I can't wait. Thank you so much, Tiggy. You're doing an amazing job. Guys, support Tiggy as she endeavors to do this by herself because she is amazing
and
deserves all the love.
You're the best.